morning. We start a new study this morning. We are a week late in this class. All the other classes started a new quarter the first Sunday of the month on schedule. But I'm blaming the weather and daylight saving time, whatever else I can blame. Poor teaching planning, maybe. But we were ended up being a week behind. And so we're starting our new study today. Study of types, biblical typology. If you didn't get a handout, raise your hand and we will remedy that right now. Introduction, kind of into the concept of what we're talking about, and then we'll just move right into some examples of types and shadows that are in the scriptures. I'm excited about the study, different kind of a study. The first time I've really done a class study on typology, and so hopefully it'll be beneficial to all of us. Hopefully it'll be a good study. We'll begin that, but let's start with a word of prayer. I'm sure I got my phone turned off. Okay, types are shadows. We're going to look at some different words. There's different words that are used throughout the scriptures to convey the same thought, the idea of the type anti-type relationship. And that's maybe an unusual enough words, and I found it to be a difficult concept sometimes because the words almost seem like they mean the opposite of what sometimes we think they should, of the idea of type and anti-type. So let's use some time this morning to kind of maybe just it to reinforce and ingrain within our minds what we're talking about and how these words are being used. Our English word type actually comes from the Greek word. Tupos or typos. The Greek language doesn't have a letter Y. The letter that we write as a U is the Greek word upsilon, and sometimes it's written with a Y. And so this tupos could be also typos. And so that's from where we get our English word. Is type actually comes from the Greek word type or typos or tupos. And it has a varied meaning. It really started out to mean the mark of a stroke or a blow. Think in ancient times of having maybe a hammer and a chisel. And then you would strike that chisel or strike that whatever object into something, and the mark that was left was the type. It was the word the type. It kind of came to change its meaning and to have the idea of application of a person. And you can look in your handout the definition that we've put there from Thayer's. It's kind of a long one, but I thought it was interesting enough to put in there. But we really want to focus in upon the definition 4D, all the way down to the very bottom. It says, in a doctrinal sense of a type, that is, a person or thing prefiguring a future person or thing. And so that's the definition from Thayer's that we want to take away for our study. In fact, you might mark that in your notes, that 4D or 4D1 is kind of the definition that we're going to be using. A person or a thing prefiguring a future person or thing. And maybe another working definition would be an object, person, or event which predates another which is designed to prefigure, and that's the anti-type. In other words, the type is what predates the anti-type. And it is a type of that. It is a figure or a form of that. And hopefully that'll come clearer as we go through and kind of illustrate this and how the Bible uses that term. And so it's an object, person, or event. It doesn't have to be a person. We're going to look at the different forms of types that are there. But the type predates the antitype. And it is designed to prefigure that. In other words, to be an illustration or a form of that. We use the illustration in your handout about a typewriter. If we think about a typewriter, we have this, what I call a hammer. I don't know if there's other terms for it, but the hammer, that object, and when you hit the key, and I put in your notes, the little thing, if you're old enough to remember what a typewriter is without having to go to a museum to see it, but you remember the typewriter that has that little, you hit a key, you hit the M key, it makes that M hammer go forward and hit the ink and form the M on the paper. And so you've got the M, the metal M on the hammer, and then you've got the letters that end up on the paper. The metal object would be the antitop, and the letters on the paper would be the type. In our definitions of types and antitypes. And again, that seems to some sense backwards in our minds because we think about type being on the typewriter, but the type is actually just the image that is formed from that. And so let's use another illustration. If we think about, and I know don't analyze that doesn't really work out with a rubber stamp, but hopefully the illustration makes its point, that the rubber stamp itself is the antitype, and the image that is formed when you strike that on the paper is the type. The antitype is the real thing. The type is just an image, or a reproduction, you might say, of that. Another illustration is thinking about the print of the palm. The print that shows up on the paper is the type. The actual hand is the antitype. And so the antitype is the real thing. Just think of it in that sense. The antitype is always the real object. The type is an image that represents that. Another way of illustrating that might be of a photograph. If you take a picture of somebody, in fact, we were watching the news this morning about doppelgangers, of people that look like somebody else, and they're taking pictures of those. And let's just imagine that I knew somebody somewhere else, and I say, I know somebody that looks like you. And maybe they live the distance away, and I couldn't take you and bring you face to face, but I said, I'm going to take a picture of them and show it to you. And so I go to that person and I take a picture of that person. I show you the picture. The picture is going to be the type. The person themselves is the antitype. In other words, the type is just an image or a representation. It's not the real person, but it's just an image or a representation of the person. And so again, there's the idea of type and antitype. There are numerous types and antitypes in the Bible. In fact, it probably will amaze us when we go through this study at just how many of those there are. But maybe it won't, because we deal with that. We may not have been using the language type, antitype, but we've known that concept for a long time, haven't we? That in the Old Testament, there's so many Old Testament things that have their counterpart, if we use that language, in the New Testament. Can somebody just give us a random example of that, of some Old Testament thing that has a New Testament counterpart? Okay, Jonah in the Old Testament. Jonah would be the type, and its counterpart or the antitype would be Christ. And remember, the New Testament talks about Jonah and the correlation there. And that's a good point. We'll make this point later. When you have a type antitype, think about the rubber stamp. Let's go back to that. Not just in my flawed illustration here, but in a rubber stamp and that image on paper, they're not identical, are they? They're actually will end up being a mirror image, almost the opposite in a sense, won't they? Because in order for it to read type on the paper, it's got to really be typed backwards on the rubber stamp, doesn't it? And so That's a good way of illustrating the idea of a type and an antitype don't have to be identical. In fact, if Jonah is a type of Christ, what's the correlation that's made there? In what sense is Christ the antitype to Jonah's type?
3 days in the earth.
Okay, 3 days is really the only comparison, isn't there? Because if you go back and you study the story of Jonah, you think, well, now Jonah doesn't match up with Christ, because Jonah, really not a good guy in that story, is he? He ends up running away from God. That's why he ends up getting swallowed to begin with, wasn't he? Because he cowardly ran away from God. And then when he goes and does what God tells him to do, he kind of has a pouty attitude about that, doesn't he? Well, that's not Christ. Christ didn't run away from his mission, did he? And when he fulfilled his mission, he did not sulk and pout about it. So we can't expect every characteristic of the type to match up with the antitype. And so I think Jonah and Christ are perfect illustrations of that, aren't they? There's a lot of dissimilarities between those two. But the type-antitype exists that one thing. They both were in the tomb for 3 days. That's the type antitype. What's another? Can you think of another random Old Testament thing that has a New Testament counterpart?
Going through the Red Sea.
Noah.
Okay, passing through the Red Sea, the salvation of Noah.
Water.
Through water. Yeah. The others? David? Okay, the tabernacle and the church. I mean, so...
The lamb.
Okay, the lamb, sacrificial lamb being offered. So we may not be surprised. We may not always, again, use the language type antitype, but we know that concept that these Old Testament things foreshadow or prefigure their New Testament counterparts. And so the Old Testament, every one of those Old Testament people or things that you just mentioned would be the type. All of their New Testament counterparts would be the antitype. The word typos, the Greek word, is actually found 16 times in the New Testament. We have those listed in your notes. And I want to look at it. We'll go through those 16 instances this morning. We'll do it pretty quickly to kind of give us a good idea of what this word means. It's not always used in the type-antitype format. Sometimes it's used in like this. Remember, the other disciples therefore said to him, that is to Doubting Thomas, we've seen the Lord. So he said to them, unless I see in his hands the print, there's that word type, the print of the nails, and my finger, and put my fingers into the print of the nails, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. He used the word type there. In other words, the nail made an imprint into the hands, doesn't it? The nail was the antitype, and the imprint or the holes was the type. And so there's the first usage of that word. In Acts chapter 7, verse 43, he said, you also took up the tabernacle of Moloch and the star of your god, Remphan, images which you made to worship, and I will carry you away beyond Babylon. Stephen here was talking about the idea that these idols were actually just images of the real gods. And sometimes that's a concept that they many times made these images, not thinking that that image was the god itself, but it was just an image of the god, an imprint of the god, or likeness of the god. And you remember, God condemned that, didn't he, in the Ten Commandments. And God not only condemned making some other god, God also condemned them making an image that would represent him as well. It wasn't just that he condemned serving some other god through idolatry. God also condemned serving him through idolatry. Don't make a graven image that represents me, God would also say. And so there's the idea of the image as being a type. Romans chapter 5, verse 14, used in the sense in which we're studying it here, says, nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over those who had not sinned according to the likeness of the transgression of Adam, who is a type of him who was to come, that is, of Christ. And so Adam was a type, and Christ was the antitype. There's some correlations between Adam and Christ. But really, in Romans 5, Paul argues there's really more differences between Adam than Christ, but there are some likenesses that are there. They both introduce something of the first. In Acts chapter 7, verse 44, it says, "Our fathers had the tabernacle of witness in the wilderness, and he appointed, instructing Moses to make it according to the pattern that he had seen." And so the tabernacle was made according to the pattern, according to the time. And so the pattern isn't the real thing. It's a likeness of the real thing. Titus 2, verse 7, "In all things showing yourself to be a pattern of good works," or a type is the word that's actually translated there. A pattern of good works. Hebrews 8, "Who serve the copy and shadow of the heavenly things," as Moses was divinely instructed when he's about to make the tabernacle. "For he said, see that you make all things according to the pattern shown you on the mountain." So pattern is a good word to kind of illustrate this. Think of a pattern. The pattern is never the real thing. It's just an image or a likeness of the real thing. It's a prototype, if you will. In Acts 23 and 25, the letter to Claudius Lysias says he wrote a letter in the following manner, or in the following type. And so he said that's the type of letter that he wrote. In Romans 6, verse 17, it's translated form. "But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered," or the type of doctrine, or the pattern of doctrine. It's found twice in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Both times there, it's translated example. "Now these things became our examples," he says, "of those Old Testament things, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted." And so they gave us a type or a pattern or an example that we might learn from. Then in verse 11 it says, "Now all these things happened to them as examples," or as types, "and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ages, end of the ages may come." I want to pause there on that verse 11, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11. Remember, we'll look at that chapter in the course of our study. Paul there is showing some similarities between what Israel went through and what we as Christians or the church will go through. But he says there kind of in this summarization verse of verse 11 that all these things, that is these Old Testament things, happened to them as types. These were the types. They weren't the real thing. They were the examples or the patterns or the types. And they were written, he says, for our admonition. And so we could use this verse as the incentive, if you will, or the justification for this study, because that's what we're doing. We're looking at these types or these examples that Paul says was written for our admonition or for our learning. And so the purpose of the Old Testament, and that's what we're really going to be studying, is the Old Testament and how it prefigures some of these New Testament things. And I think it's important for us to every once in a while pause and remind ourselves why the Old Testament was written and why it is preserved for us today. Now, we know, and we can all make the argument, that it's not written as a code of conduct, is it? We're not under that old law. And so we don't read it to say, okay, I need to read there in Leviticus or in Deuteronomy to figure out how to prepare the lamb or the turtle doves for sacrifice. We don't read it to learn that kind of thing. And, well, I need to learn it to figure out what day the day of the Passover is so I can observe the Passover. We don't read it for that sense. But it's there for a reason. And it's not just there for a history book. Now, some of us like history, some of us don't like history, but those of the history buffs might say, "I like it because it's just a good history." Well, it is that, but that's not why it's there. It's also not there for us to look down our noses at the Israelites and say, "Look how bad they were. I can't believe they did that. Shame on them. Look at those murmuring people. Look at those rebellious people. It's not there just so that we can look at people who sin and ridicule and make fun of them. Paul says it's written for our learning, for our admonition. It was an example. They were types that were written. We can learn from them. And so it was there for our learning. And that's what we're going to try to do in this quarter, in this study, that these types that were there. Paul in Philippians 3 verse 17 says, he was a type. Brethren, joined in following my example, or in my pattern, he would go on to say. That's that word, typos, or type. Following my type, you can live your life and pattern it after me. 1 Thessalonians 1, so that you became examples. The Thessalonians were examples or types that could be followed by others. 2 Thessalonians 3, not because we do not have authority, but to make ourselves an example of how you should follow us, or make ourselves a type that you could follow. 1 Timothy 4, let no one despise your youth, but be an example to believers, or be a type that people could be the antitype to. 1 Peter 5, verse 3, elders are instructed to be examples to the flock, that they should be the type of people that we should be. In Hebrews, those are the examples of the 16 times that the word type is found in the New Testament. Now, they're used in a little bit different senses, but they all carry with it the same concept, don't they? That here's a pattern, or here's an example that can be followed, or here is a likeness of the real thing. So let's look now at Hebrews chapter 9. Doesn't use the word tupos or typos or type, but Hebrews 9 verses 23 and 24 talks about the concept that we're talking about and uses some of the different words that we're going to be talking about. When it says, therefore it was necessary that the copies, there's another word that or illustration we could use, couldn't it? Go upstairs here to the copy machine and you take the real object and put the real object on there and get a copy of that. So you've got the copy is the type. The real object that you put on the glass is the antitype. Therefore, it's necessary that the copies of the things in the heavens should be purified with these. That is, the blood and the sacrifices of the Old Testament. But the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these. See, he's saying those Old Testament things were just copies. The New Testament, or the heavenly things, are the real thing. For Christ has not entered the holy places made with hands, that is, the holy place in the tabernacle or the temple. That was just the copy, which are copies of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. This text is the best one to illustrate the concept of what we're talking about. Again, he doesn't use our word type. He uses the word copied, which is a different word translated here. But it's the concept, isn't it? And so there's a lot of words we're going to be talking about. Shadow is another word, copy. But this brings to mind not only the concept of how this is used, that those Old Testament things were copies of the New Testament things. And that brings up a couple concepts that I want us to get out of this study as well. Number one, to understand that was a part of the point. It wasn't just a coincidence. You know, sometimes coincidences happen in life, don't they? And you just think, oh, well, that's a coincidence. We happened to wear the same tie this morning, or you know, we wore the same color of shirt. That wasn't intended. It just kind of accidentally happened that way. When we see Old Testament things looking kind of like New Testament things, it wasn't just a coincidence, was it? It didn't just kind of happen. Well, isn't that kind of neat? No. The point is, that's the way God intended it. God intended there to be a correlation, a type-antitype relationship. But also what's important for us to understand, and the word copies, I think, gives us that concept a little bit in clarity is that the reality might not always follow the chronological order. In other words, the copy, the shadow, the figure, the type predates the antitype as far as when it came upon the scene, but not in reality, does it? Think of it this way. Let's say that, maybe I should have had the picture on the PowerPoint to illustrate this, but think about if somebody says they're going to build a new shopping center here in Florence. It comes in the paper and they're going to have this big shopping center, and they have a big to-do down at the Chamber of Commerce or something. In fact, you could go down there. Have you ever seen one of those little mini shopping centers where they put it out on this big board there? And it's a miniature version of what it's going to look like. And some architect has gone to the trouble of made this little miniature. And that's what the shopping center is going to look like. And to get everybody excited about that. And so they have that big ceremony. You can go down there and you can see this little shopping center that's about that big. But it's made just like what it's going to look like. Well, that comes first, doesn't it? It's going to be a year before the real shopping center looks like that. But we know that in reality, it's the opposite of that, isn't it? That what came first, it's not that somebody in their hobby room made a little shopping center just for the fun of it and then got to looking at it and he said, you know, I made this little shopping center. I think I might make a full-size shopping center that'll look like that. Would that be a good thing? That's not how it works, is it? Somebody said, I'm going to make a big shopping center. And so, Mr. Artist, will you make me a little one that will look like the big one that I'm going to make? And we'll show them that one first. That's the way we need to look at these types and shadows. In other words, let's use the lamb. Someone said the lamb is a type antitype, and it certainly is. It's not this way. This is not the way it happened. God didn't say, okay, Old Testament people, I want you to sacrifice a lamb as an offering to me. And so they did that for hundreds of years. And then he says, you know, I think I'll make my son be like that lamb. That'll work out. And so I'll call him the lamb because his blood's going to be shed kind of like that lamb. That's like saying the guy made the little shopping center and then just decided to make the big shopping center. In reality, what God, the Bible portrays it this way, doesn't it? That God first conceived that I'm going to send my son, and he's going to shed his blood. But before that happens, I'm going to make a small one to look like the big one. And so I'm going to make these people offer up lambs and shed its blood that will look like the real thing. And so that's the order. It actually happens in reverse in the way it appears chronologically. We saw the little prototype of the shopping center first. It came on the scene first, but it wasn't conceived of first. And so that's what we're talking about here. Therefore, it was necessary that the copies of the things in the heavens should be purified with these, but the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these. For Christ has not entered into the holy places made with hands, which are copies of the true. I don't mean to be flippant about it, but let's use just the word copy is here, and we're familiar with the copy machine, and it so happens that ours is upstairs. So maybe this illustration was meant to be. It's almost as if God made a copy of these things, and he sent the copy down first, and then later would send the original. That's the order, and I want us to understand that firmly in our minds as we go through this, that these are copies, and though they predate the real thing, they don't really predate the real thing. They just made their appearance first. Here's some things we need to keep in mind as we go through this study. First of all, that these types and shadows are always real. This differentiates them from parables. There's some similarities, but here's the big difference between a parable. You know, Jesus would tell parables, but a parable parable is a fictional character or thing that represents the real. In other words, think of the story of the prodigal son. The father in that story of the prodigal son represented who in reality? God. But that was a fictional father, wasn't it? That was a story that Jesus just made up as an illustration. There wasn't a real father that had this relationship with his son. But when we talk about types and shadows, those aren't parables. They're not fictional events and places. They're real. The Jonah was a real character. The lamb in the Old Testament was real. The tabernacle was real. And so these types and shadows are real people, persons, events, and institutions. Another thing to keep in mind, the type predates the antitype. As we see it coming on the scene. Now, we just talked about how it doesn't really predate it, but as far as when it comes on the scene, the tabernacle and the temple were visually seen before the church was seen. Jonah was before Christ. The Lamb was before Christ, as far as they were unveiled in history. And so the type comes first, then the antitype, or the type is seen first, maybe is the best way to say that. Like prophecy in general, types were often unknown to their original audience. And I think you could probably say were not only often, but maybe always, weren't they? Did the Old Testament Jews know when they went to the temple that it represented the church? No. Did the priest know when he was slaughtering a lamb that that represented the Son of God who was going to come in the flesh? He may have had a loose concept of that, but he didn't understand like we understand. And so these types were, like most prophecies, unknown at the time that they represented something else.
That was my question. I want to get you a comment on that question. Can you tell us the difference between the prophecy and the types?
Yes.
I felt like in my own mind that these types and antitypes almost represented prophecy.
Yes, they are a form of prophecy. Yes. You know, prophecy, we take prophecy to be the general word. Sometimes prophecy is just spoken, isn't it? Sometimes a prophet would just say, there's coming a day when this is going to happen. And those are the words. The antitype, the type antitype was objects or people that. And so sometimes there's the difference maybe between what we generally think of prophecy as words that were spoken.
Specificity.
Yes. Yeah, specificity versus generality. Yeah, good point. Some types are explained in the New Testament. Some are more obscure. And this is really going to, this is a debate and something maybe we'll discuss. You know, obviously sometimes the types are spelled out. Let's look at a couple of examples, or think about a couple of examples. We don't have the time to actually turn and look at them. But the one of Adam and Christ in Romans chapter 5. It says that he's a type. And so that one is spelled out. The Israelites and the Christians in 1 Corinthians 10. Melchizedek and Christ in Hebrews 7. Those are spelled out and said. Those are type-antitype relationships. There are others that are maybe more obscure. We'll look at later in Hebrews chapter 4. The Sabbath rest for Christians. That's not really spelled out exactly what the type-antitype relationship there is. But here's a question, and I don't know that there's an answer to this. Can a type-antitype relationship exist when it's not spoken of in the New Testament at all? In other words, sometimes the New Testament says clearly, this lamb represents the Lamb of God. But what if we just discover something ourselves that the Bible doesn't say that represents that, but we say, well, I was studying this in the Old Testament, and that's kind of like what we do today. Now, I don't have a New Testament passage that says that was a type, and this is the antitype, but does it have to be spelled out for it to actually be? And I would argue, no, it doesn't have to be specified in the New Testament. I would also argue you have to be very careful about that. about pushing that point, but I think there may be some type antitypes that aren't really spelled out or specified. We have to be very cautious about that. We wouldn't certainly establish any kind of doctrine on the basis of that. But I think we'll be able to see some similarities there, discover them on our own. Charles?
In any situation like that, you have to try your best to determine what pleases God, even if you don't have the exact direction to go or not. But you can pretty well determine what pleases Him by the way He reacts to other situations.
Yeah, and that's the type and type of that in the Old Testament. Here's how God... The law, we don't live under that anymore, but we can learn how God dealt with His people and how He was pleased by them, certainly. Another point to consider as we go through this is the type is not precisely like its antitype. In other words, you can't push the point. In other words, let's use an example. Another type antitype is the type was the brazen serpent, remember, that was used in the camp when the children of Israel were bitten by the poisonous snakes, and Moses made this image of a snake and put it on the pole, and if they looked at that, they would be saved. The New Testament says that that's a form of Christ. There's a type antitype. You'll read some books, some people that just try too hard, and they'll say, well, yes, and they'll take every aspect of that. Well, that was made out of brass, and so brass represents this, and Jesus is like brass in this sense. That's pushing the point. And sometimes people do that with parables, too. And sometimes, in the comparison, there may be only one or two things that are lessons. And you can't take every aspect of that, everything about it, every detail has to line up with a detail in the New Testament. Doesn't work that way. And so we have to be very careful. Sometimes there's just one or two points of correlation to that. Okay, we'll continue our study and actually get into some of the actual type antitypes that are discussed in both the Old and the New Testament next time. Thank you.